Good morning. It's October 22nd, 2008. The commission is meeting for its regularly scheduled meeting today in the commission hearing room, 12th floor of the State Capitol Building. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald, and with me are my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Kevin Kramer and Commissioner Tony Clark. Commissioner Kramer, do you have any opening comments for the meeting?
Good morning and welcome.
Commissioner Clark?
Good morning. I've had a busy couple of weeks. I was commenting to Charlene that I think I've put about 1,000 miles on the car these last 2 weeks, just traveling around North Dakota to a number of different projects and meetings and things like that. So it's been very interesting. Yeah, it's been good to be out.
I move passage of items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 SW1. This isn't a commission voting item, but it's a commission informational item. The commission each year reports in a yearly fashion on the public contacts that the commission has received through the year. We record these contacts between September 1st and August 30th of the following year. And so this report reflects items from September 1, 2007 through August 30th of 2008. In this particular report, we're reporting that the Public Service Commission, we're releasing our annual consumer contact report, and we're noting that the number of questions regarding billing of energy utilities more than doubled in the recent public contact report, while the number of telecommunications contacts dropped significantly. Of the 808 contacts that the commission received, those regarding bills for electricity and natural gas totaled 200, which is more than last year's total of 88. And we can all understand why. We had the number, we had quite a number of contacts regarding Otter Tail Power Company's electricity rates in winter and spring of 2008. And the commission also had a number of contacts regarding NSP's gas meters. And so that raised the number of these billing issues for electricity and natural gas. Telecommunications issues have gone down, the number of contacts regarding those bills. And I'll let Commissioner Clark comment on that if he wishes, because he has the comment in the press release that we've put out about this today. But the important thing is that these two reports are going to be on our Public Service Commission website, and the reason that the commission does this is not only to give us a chance to review and see what type of contacts we have received over the preceding year, but also to make them available to the public in a substantive way so that if they have a concern about any particular company and they wish to go on the commission website and to take a look and see how many contacts were received from customers regarding a particular company, they can do that. They can also go in and find out how many. We do it in two ways, by subject matter also. So, for example, they can see we had 74 recorded contacts regarding license and rail. I do want to emphasize that these are recorded contacts because occasionally on a busy day, our staff receives a contact and they don't necessarily record it. And so these are the recorded contacts. Also, I also like to make the point that these are not all complaints or concerns. A contact is just that. It can be a request for information. It can be a compliment. It can be a concern about a company. So that's why we record them as contacts. Specific records of each contact, though, we do keep available so that the commission can be aware of whether it is a concern, a compliment, or a question of inquiry.
The one of the things that really jumps out at you and I think is indicative of really what's facing this utility commission as well as other utility commissions across the country is this rather major shift towards more and more consumer contacts related to the energy industry and less related to the telecommunications industry. And if you think back probably 10 or 15 years ago, it was really flipped, and I think the reason was because you had for a long period of time not a lot of activity as far as new investments or lots of new rate cases, things like that on the energy side. It was basically a fairly stable industry, one who had built a lot of assets and were depreciating those assets off, and there just wasn't as much activity, whereas in telecom there were startup companies, there were all the growing pains of competition, there were concerns about how consumers were being treated in this new era of competition, and things have really subsided a lot in the telecom industry. Staff received 246 contacts last year related to telecommunication services. Prior to that, there had been 507 contacts in the year prior related to telecom services. Even amongst that, complaints and contacts related to cellular phone companies, for example, it was 127 the year before. It was down to 72 last year, and I think it also shows how the efforts that both the commission has made in recent years as well, and particularly the investments that wireless companies have made in North Dakota, are making a difference. We are hearing from less consumers that have concerns with coverage gaps, problems. We still get them. Make no mistake, wireless coverage isn't perfect, but the many millions of dollars and dozens of cell sites that have gone up each of the last few years, I think, are making a difference. And we're seeing it through less contacts to our office from communities that don't have service. There still are those, and we're still working with those, and hopeful that they, too, will be getting those upgrades soon.
You know, one of the other things that I've noticed and seen this shift that Tony's talking about is, of course, a lot of the telephone issues that have been raised by consumers relate to the complexity of bills. Sometimes they're confusing to them. And we're seeing some of the same thing now as people pay close attention to their electric and gas bills. And, of course, the famous 67 contacts from XL customers regarding the problem with meters in the Red River Valley, gas meters, was a good example of that. Although that spurred a lot of contacts, it also provided the opportunity for staff to work with consumers and the company to help clear up some of that confusion and actually not only deal with this investigation that's going on currently, but deal with specific consumer problems and issues and get them resolved in a satisfactory manner. I might also add, just as a general statement regarding this whole issue, is we've really been blessed to have Tom on staff that gets up every day thinking about how am I going to help consumers today that call the Public Service Commission. So to have a full-time person, or a person who for the most part deals with consumer issues, has really been helpful to all of us, and certainly to the consumers that he serves. So thanks, Tom, for a job well done.
Just one comment, just so that you can see how this would work. If you go under the one report that deals with specific areas, you can see that the commission on page 2 had 25 contacts regarding railroad issues, and then it gives a listing of the type of issues that were encountered with those railroad contacts. If you go to the one where it says company total at the top, and you go to page 2, you'll see that 16 of those contacts came from Burlington Northern Santa Fe. You turn the next page, and you can see that 5 came in from CP Rail. You turn the next page, and you see that 1 more came in from Red River Valley and Western, and I won't go through the rest, but that totals about 23 right there. So it gives you an idea then of where those contacts came from regarding the companies in the state. So that's how people can cross-reference both of these reports, and they both provide helpful information to the public. Okay, moving on to SW2. I move the commission award a contract to Hansen's Excavating, Inc. for the 2008 Sinkholes 4 AML maintenance project that involves sinkhole filling at several abandoned underground mines in Burley, McLean, and Ward counties.
Second.
If you remember, a few weeks ago, we issued an intent to award this bid, and now we are awarding this contract. It is for $27,000. It involves filling project that involves several AML sites in West Central North Dakota.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, SW3, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent and assess a filing fee of $100,000 due upon the filing of an application in case number PU08597, Heartland Wind Farms proposed 2,000 megawatt wind energy facility in Ward, Burke, and Montreal counties, North Dakota. This particular project, Heartland Wind, they say in their letter of intent that they expect to file an application on or about June 1st of 2009, and they say it's their desire to have the permit issued by April 1st of 2010. This particular project would be constructed on up to 720 square miles of leased private property in Ward, Burke, and Montreal counties. The project would consist of 1,333 wind turbine generators, two or more permanent meteorological towers, access roads, underground and overhead collection lines, substations, and operations and maintenance facilities. It says construction is expected to begin in multiple phases beginning in the fall of 2010, and the cost of constructing the proposed project is approximately $4 billion. This is the largest wind farm that we have received a letter of intent on yet at the commission. The other one that was quite large was earlier this year from Florida Power and Light in northwest of Mandan for 1,000 megawatts. Now this is a 2,000 megawatt wind energy facility that's being proposed in North Dakota. Now a project of this size, I want to emphasize, will require construction of a major transmission line to carry the power from this wind farm to the customers. This company, Heartland Wind, also recognizes that a major transmission line would need to be built to facilitate this project. I just want to also emphasize that planning and construction of a major transmission line can take a number of years.
$4 billion isn't a federal bailout, but it's still a lot of money in anybody's book. It's the numbers that you see being thrown around as potential development in North Dakota is truly eye-popping. 2,000 megawatts of power, if this facility were in place and operating today, would be by far, and not even close, by far the largest wind farm, not just in the country, but in the world. And I think it shows the level of interest in this wind resource that we have here, this and the next project that we'll be accepting a letter of intent on as well.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and setting application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 due upon the filing of an application in case number PU08797. Sequoia Energy U.S. Inc.'s proposed 150-megawatt wind energy conversion facility in Rolette and Towner counties, North Dakota.
Second.
150-megawatt wind farm is a large wind farm. It's just that it's small in comparison to the one we just discussed. You have to remember that at the end of last year, we only had 375 megawatts in the state constructed and built. And so 150 megawatts is a significant addition. This particular project, it's called the Border Winds Wind Energy Project, will be configured as a wind energy conversion facility with a nameplate capacity of approximately 150 megawatts. It would also include a substation that would connect the system to an XL energy transmission line that runs through the project area. The project will use approximately 68 turbines, and it would be built on approximately 122 square miles of land in Rolette and Towner counties in North Dakota. Sequoia anticipates project construction on Border Winds will start in the summer or fall of 2009, and that the facility would become operational in the fall of 2010. And the estimated cost for construction of the proposed facility is $300 million. They are asking that we request that the waiting period between the submission of this letter of intent and the submission of the application be reduced from 1 year to 1 day. The commission is acting on that request, and approving that request. That isn't different from a lot of other facilities that we've had the same request from.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Kramer.
KC1, I move the commission approve revision number 24 to surface coal mining permit KRSB 8802 held by Dakota Westmoreland Corporation to add 54.5 acres to this permit for the Beulah mine and to update the appropriate sections of the permit for the added area.
Second.
The purpose of the additional 54.5 acres is to allow the construction of a walkway for moving the drag line and a loading shovel that is currently east of Highway 49 to the west side of Highway 49. So it's not very much land. In fact, some of it's reclaimed land and previously bond released land, but it will accommodate the moving of that drag line so that they can mine on the other side of the highway. The surface of the added area is owned by Coyote Power Plant Partners, and the coal under it is for federal ownership. However, no coal is going to be mined in the area. It's specifically, as I stated, for the dragline walkway. They plan to reclaim the walkway in 2016, and the reason for leaving the walkway that long is if there are additional contracts for more coal, they will likely have to move the dragline back to the east side of the highway, so it will be there for some time. This was a significant revision. It was appropriately noticed to all agencies, affected landowners, advisory committee, and, of course, appropriate notice in the newspapers. There was no objection nor request for an informal hearing on the topic, so everything seems to be in order.
All in favor?
Aye.
I am going, KC 2 and 4 relate to one another, so I'm going to, if without objection, take KC 3 out of order, and I'll move that to after these two.
Okay.
Because they, like I say, they
You're going to do the fuel cost adjustments
I'll,
now.
I'll do those last, in fact. I'll do KC2 now, and then I'll follow that with KC4.
All right.
KC2 being the acknowledgement of the letter of intent, KC4 being acknowledgement of the filing of the application, which we received a short time ago. So KC2. I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to one day, and assess a filing fee of $30,000 due upon filing of an application and case number PU08812, Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC's proposed Stanley Pump Station upgrades.
Second.
It's almost hard to keep track of all of Enbridge's upgrades, but it's a wonderful issue. Right now, what this is a very specific upgrade to just the Stanley Pump Station. We received this letter of intent on October 8th, and the reason I moved KC4 up one notch as to be the next motion is because about a week later we received the application, as mentioned in the letter of intent, so I want to deal with that as well right away. But just a description of the of this application. Their intention is to upgrade the Stanley Pump Station on the existing property. Now, there will be a new footprint, some new facilities, but there will not be any new land acquired. We'll be noticing here in the next motion an opportunity for a hearing as opposed to scheduling a hearing. I do think, though, it's worth noting that the Enbridge system has seen tremendous investment in the last 3 years. In fact, by my calculation, over $250 million has been invested just in the North Dakota system by Enbridge in the last 3 years, increasing their capacity by about 120,000 barrels per day. This will add 15,000 more barrels per day. So certainly Enbridge is doing their part, both by making good business practices on behalf of Enbridge Pipelines, but also to move more of our oil to the marketplace, and that of course, is greatly appreciated. So everything seems to be in order for that, and I may elaborate a little bit more when I do KC4.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. KC4, I move the commission issue a notice of filing a notice of opportunity for hearing in case number PU08812, Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC's proposed Stanley Pump Station upgrades.
Second.
As I said, we received this filing the following week after we received the letter of intent, staff went to work hard on it, and staff that doesn't have a lot of spare time, but we're able to deem it complete so that we could get it on today's agenda. This is a notice of opportunity for a hearing, and comments and requests for a hearing must be received by December 3rd of 2008. If we do not receive any of those, we could handle it without a formal hearing. Probably, in all likelihood, would have an informal hearing to get more information, of course, from the company.
What I noted about this is that no new land will be acquired, as all construction will take place on land already owned in fee by Enbridge, and that all the work is going to take place right on the present facilities.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Now, moving out of order to KC3. KC3 is not a motion or for action, but rather for information purposes only. They are the cost of gas adjustments. MDU is decreasing its propane cost of gas charge by $2.74 per decatherm. Cost of gas change will go from $19.06 to $16.31 per decatherm for customers in November. For typical November customer, the cost of propane in the bill will be about $30.17 lower than last month and about $38.63 higher than November of last year.
I had a call this last week on propane costs, not specifically related to MDU, but in general, and that person was wondering why propane costs aren't dropping as fast as oil costs or natural gas costs.
That call was for me, Susan.
Yeah, that was Tony calling.
And actually, so I think there's a lot of people wondering that around the state. I mean, this is a drop from $19.06 to $16.31. It is a drop, but it's not. It isn't going down as fast for customers.
The reason I say that, we just got our tank filled yesterday. And I got the receipt was shoved in our door, and I picked it up this morning when I went out to pick up the newspaper, and I had the same reaction. I thought, my God, why hasn't propane dropped more than
yeah,
it has?
Right.
It just
with oil, it usually follows the cost of oil.
It absolutely shocked me, but yeah, it hasn't.
You know, interesting. It does. Gas is one of those things that, or propane is one of those things that's connected to both oil price and natural gas price. And natural gas prices have held their own pretty well as well compared to oil prices for a couple of reasons, and we could get into
it
in a little bit.
Yeah, but we look at the ones we're going to be discussing now have gone down significantly. So.
Actually, not. In fact, I'll go to the next.
Okay, go to the next one.
MDU is increasing its cost of gas charge by $1.14 per decatherm for November, and the residential. A typical residential customer bill will be about $12.57 higher than October and about $40.93 higher than November of last year. Now, the MDU's gas is somewhat unique because it's subject to the Rocky Mountain Index, and the Rocky Mountain Express has been down, so that there's been a lot of captured gas in the Rocky Mountain West, which, of course, works to the consumer's benefit. Now, NSP, on the other hand, they're decreasing their cost of gas by $1.91 per decatherm compared to last month. And for a typical October customer, the cost of gas in the bill will be about $8.42 lower than last month and $2.94 lower than October of 2007. Now, also keep in mind, this is October. MDU's is November because of the time that we
act on that.
So that also is a change. Some of it depends on what index you're in, or not, but at any rate, there's some good news and some not so great news in
all of that. Well, in MDU's, theirs was 20 cents lower than NSP's for the month of October.
Right.
So all things we could see a slight increase next month for NSP as well, but it has been a more significant drop over the last few months for. Companies with natural gas than we've seen in propane. Let's just put it that way. You look at those charts and you can see how those numbers have gone down recently for natural gas. We don't keep a chart for propane, I don't believe.
Well, the propane customers, of course, as you probably all remember, are the Hettinger customers for MDU, about 330-some customers down there. Okay. Anyway, that ends the items in my portfolio.
All right, now we'll go to Commissioner Clark.
Thank you.
Moving to TC1, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08761, granting the request of Turtle River Bean Company, a division of C&F Food, City of Industry, California, to operate a 20,000-bushel grain warehouse at Mackville, North Dakota, effective October 14, 2008. I further move the commission grant the request of Turtle River Bean Company, a division of C&F Food, to operate its grain warehouse at Mackville, North Dakota, full-time through November 30th, and then on an as-needed basis by appointment only for the remainder of the year. The Turtle River Bean is setting up really basically just a receiving station in Mackville. They're leasing a few grain tanks there to receive the beans in.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
TC2, I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity to file written comments in the application for approval of an interconnection agreement negotiated between Midcontinent Communications and Consolidated Telecom, case number PU08815.
Second.
These two companies have been in a period of consultation for quite some time. The interconnection agreement, the reason we're noticing it this time and not simply allowing it to go into effect by virtue of the 90-day statutory clock, is because the parties have an interest in having it be effective prior to that date. So we will put it out for comment, and if we receive none, I assume we'll be approving it at a commission meeting soon.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC3, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE08826, granting the request of North Central Grain Cooperative, Bisbee, North Dakota, to discontinue business at Agate, North Dakota, effective November 1st, 2008. Second. This is a result of a licensing division a request that was received by the licensing division. The facility at Agate is not in working condition. It is empty. There are no outstanding storage obligations, and it is being closed.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio.
And that ends the items on the regular agenda of the commission. I will have you take note that this afternoon the commission is holding an informal hearing. That informal hearing is going to be regarding the commission's staff issuing a decision regarding the commission's non-jurisdiction of the drying facility at South Hart. We've been asked by Dakota Resource Council to look further at that decision, so the commission will be holding an informal hearing on that matter this afternoon.
What was the time, please?
1:30. All right, and now the commission's ready to take any questions that you may have.
I wanted to ask a bit about the Rame pump station. Do you know, is this part of the previously announced capacity upgrades on that line, or is this something
brand new
in addition to that?
You know, first of all, Stanley, this is the Stanley pump station. I don't know when you say previously announced by the company and or the governor or whatever. I don't know whether that was part of their mix when they had their charts out, but this is our first look at it. We received the letter of intent October 8th and then the application October 13th.
Well, I guess another way is the increase in the injection capacity by 15,000 barrels a day. Do we know what the baseline is when they talk about 15,000 barrels a day?
I believe the baseline is about 120,000. I shouldn't say 100. 120,000 are the new, like I said, the last 3 years of investment have increased it by about 120,000 barrels per day. This is 15,000 barrels per day on top of that by our tracking, you know, of the regulatory process.
Oh, Pat knows the answer.
No, I just wanted to mention that this does not increase the capacity of the pipeline.
True, yeah. It just increases the amount that'll be injected, right?
Okay. So this is to allow more barrels to be put into the line at Stanley rather than increase the overall capacity of the pipeline.
The throughput is increased, but not
the
does that make sense? Is that right? Is that the right word? The throughput
the pipe,
is increased,
yeah,
but not the
stays
capacity.
The same.
How much oil the line can carry? I'm afraid the throughput is a bit too exotic.
The amount that goes through on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, the amount that goes through the pipeline does not increase, but the amount that can be put into the pipeline at Stanley would be increased by 15,000 barrels per day.
That sounds perfect.
I understand that correctly.
It's like a very good explanation.
It's hard to...
How much can be put into the pipeline at Stanley now? Do we know?
You know, I don't know that I do know that off the top of my head. Do you know that, Pat?
I can check the application.
Okay. Staff indicates that they'll check the application and get that information then for the media.
Very good. The Sequoia Energy Project, I was reading their letter. It's kind of interesting tone. Do they explain at all what is meant by a community-first approach to wind energy development?
Well, we have a number of different companies that are organized in different way who are proposing wind projects in North Dakota. And if you'll refer me to the paragraph that you're looking at with this.
I'm looking at the second paragraph, the second sentence.
As a pioneer in developing a community-first approach to wind energy development, no, they do not explain that any further.
Is there anything unusual about this application that demonstrates a special
I think community it's the way, sensitivity? But I think that they're organizing it. For example, MPower is what we call community-based wind. that's a project which has been organized by a community development organization, and Empowers project, and it's actually funded by the people. The people who live in the community have funded the project.
Yeah, it's a function
and are moving it forward.
Yeah, it's a function of the ownership. I understand what you're saying.
Right.
What I'm trying to get at is there a
I do not know what they mean by community first approach.
I'm just trying to figure out if this is just,
it could be
a buzzword or if
it could be I don't know. You'll have to ask the company. That would be a question to ask the company.
We are seeing more of that sort of rhetoric with projects that are not large out-of-state developers that, like, say, an FPL that comes in and builds a project. It has no bearing on our, obviously, position on things, but we're just seeing more of that type of verbiage.
I was just wondering if it's a term of art that has a specific meaning or if it's just...
Boilerplate.
Yeah, boilerplate. Company boilerplate. The Heartland Wind Farm, I was looking at the map. The squiggly line on the east border, is that the Souris River?
I don't know. I haven't looked at the map that carefully. Jerry, do you have any thoughts on that? No.
I'm just trying to figure, there's this map, frankly, it has some kind of useful information on it.
Ward, Burke, and Montreal counties, so I don't believe the Red River. Did you say the Mouse River?
No, I said the Souris River.
Oh, the Souris River. All right.
Not to be confused with the Mouse River.
Where's the state map?
I see U.S. Highway 2. I was wondering if this was...
We have a state map. Posted right outside the door, Dale, and I'll be happy to look at that with you after the meeting.
Oh, that's okay. I can look at it.
Okay.
Myself. I don't need to trouble you with it. I just wondered if there had been any effort to kind of read this map in terms of the actual geographic boundaries.
We do know that U.S. Highway 2 is on there.
Yes, that's marked. I was just, like, the west line, the north-south line, is that a... Is that a county boundary, or is it
I don't have those answers for you right now, but I'd be happy to help you look at a state map, and we can try to figure that out.
My copy's pretty blurry.
I noticed the letter's dated July 21st. Is there any reason why it's being taken up at this time?
The commission just waited on this one a little bit.
For what reason?
We were just waiting.
Just waiting for a slow day or what?
Yes.
The sheer magnitude of it scares us. Speaking of magnitude, just to put it all in some sort of perspective, to this point we have docketed about $8 billion worth of wind farm investment, which includes wind farms that are currently they're constructed and producing, all the way to those that are at various levels of the regulatory process. So... $8 billion of it. I think back when I was EDNF director, I think our gross state product was about $12 billion. And here we have $8 billion worth of new investment.
And since you've left that job,
it's gotten a lot better. I have to say, every job I've left has performed better. The agencies have performed better.
There was
great potential for the PSC.
There was mention made of the need for a power line. Could you elaborate on that as far as the Hartland Wind Farm is concerned?
All right. You know, it's been quite amazing that we've been able to site and see plans being made for around 800 megawatts of wind that we'll see in place by the end of this year, between 700 and 800 megawatts in place by the end of this year. However, we're running out of niches in the transmission system where people can just put a new project without putting in more significant investment. And so we anticipate that there's going to need to be significant new development of transmission in this state in order to go to the next level of wind development. There have been quite a number of projects that have already been announced that would provide that next level jump. For example, the CapEx project, which is being planned, that will add some transmission capacity to the state of North Dakota, even though it does not extend into North Dakota at this time. The Big Stone plant, which the commission has approved, that included a transmission line from Big Stone, South Dakota, east into Minnesota. That line would also provide additional capacity if it's built. There has also been another line announced, the 345 kV line, which Minn Kota has announced, which would be built from Center into the Red River Valley. That would provide additional transmission investment and would also provide the ability to transmit more power from this state to customers out of state. And then we also have the 230 kV line, which is being built as we speak, that the commission approved earlier this summer. All of those facilities are, when they're built, and let's say that would be around 2013 to the year 2015, would provide for additional wind development in this state. However, those projects do not reach to all corners of our state, and so we are going to need to see additional transmission projects suggested if we wish to be able to develop wind in all parts of our state. I have, in this past year, suggested that the commission, or not necessarily the commission, but that the North Dakota Transmission Authority or the Upper Great Plains Transmission Coalition would look at developing renewable energy zones in our state, identifying where those are, and I could give you six right now: northwestern North Dakota, the area in the upper central part of North Dakota, the eastern part of North Dakota, southwest, south central, and southeast North Dakota, and that we would identify that those areas each have significant renewable resources in our state, and that we could start to make plans for transmission to each of those areas so that we would be proactive in this area rather than just waiting to see what develops and what new projects are announced. That would give everyone in the state a chance to get a better handle on new transmission projects that are needed and encourage that investment. So that may still happen, that one of those groups takes up that issue. I do know that Commissioner Clark is participating in a project right now that's going to be going for the next year, and you've seen the announcement in the paper, and that's regard to the governors of five states in our region, as well as the commissions, are working with them on identifying where generation is going to be located in the upper Midwest, renewable generation and other types of generation, and then what new transmission lines are needed to make that a reality. But those types of plans take some time to come to fruition because it's big investments that are needed to build large transmission lines.
The $8 billion worth of announced projects that I talked about earlier represents over 4,000 megawatts of generation. Obviously, moving 4,000 megawatts of generation not only through North Dakota but then out of North Dakota requires some massive infrastructure and certainly massive new infrastructure as well. But as Commissioner Wiefald has said and what Commissioner Clark's working on, you don't build transmission in a vacuum. You have to do it collaboratively because the market obviously is not in North Dakota but other places.
I'll share with you what I've shared at a couple of regional transmission meetings this fall with others. In our area, to meet the, let's say in North Dakota, we need only 350 megawatts to meet the renewable objective that's been set. South Dakota, about the same. And in Minnesota, they need about 6,000 additional megawatts to meet the renewable portfolio standard that's set for 2025. That's around 7,000 megawatts, roughly, 8,000 megawatts that we would need to meet the requirements in those states. Right now, in the MISO queue, there's 43,000 megawatts of wind that is being planned. All right? This group that Commissioner Clark is working on, my understanding is that one option they have is to look at whether they should work first to meet the requirements that are needed to meet those renewable portfolio standards and objectives, which would be 7,000 to 8,000 megawatts of wind needed. That leaves out 35,000 megawatts of projects, all right, that even if they work to have transmission for that 7,000 to 8,000, it leaves 35,000 megawatts of projects on the table. Let's say that North Dakota was able to, let's say Minnesota, because they have 24,000 megawatts in the MISO queue. That's not other queues that are out there as well. Let's say they decided they wanted to build 4,000 megawatts in their own state to take care of the needs, to help toward their needs. That would leave 2,000 for North Dakota and 2,000 for South Dakota. So the reality is that some of these projects are not going to be moving forward in the near future.
An interesting phenomenon is taking place across the country, but especially in the upper Midwest, where you have a lot of states mandating very aggressive renewable portfolio standards and standards that in reality they can't meet within the footprint of their own state. They do not have the resources, and so the wind resources. And so when confronted with this reality, policymakers in a lot of these other states will say, well, don't worry, we can get the wind from the Dakotas. We'll get the wind from North Dakota. And you start, adding these up, Illinois, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and they all say, well, don't worry, we'll get the wind from the Dakotas. And the reality for us here in North Dakota is it's a double-edged sword. I mean, on one hand, it's great to see that level of investment potentially coming in the state. On the other hand, all these other folks really don't care how the development happens in North Dakota. They just want it to happen. But it's incumbent on us to make sure that it happens in the right way because we do care about the impact that this level of energy investment can have.
But Illinois, when they set up their standard, for example, they want to have wind development occur in their own state as well. And they're a state that has said, if we can have, when we talk about capacity numbers, we talk about 30, let's say we, in North Dakota, sometimes we get 40% capacity. That means that 40% of the time the wind blows. All right, let's say around the windy city of Chicago it blows, I don't know, but let's just guess 30% of the time. They're wanting to know, does it make sense for them to pay the extra cost of transmission of bringing that wind from Oklahoma or North Dakota or South Dakota, or does it just pay for them to build that wind in Illinois? And they're also, for example, in Ohio and in Indiana, they're planning to build wind farms in both of those states. You look at the MISO queue, and I can give you the numbers. There are announced projects in both of those states that would very well meet any requirements that their states are setting for renewable portfolio standards. So it is, people are looking at wind just like they are at everything these days as an economic development for their own state. They're interested in having those projects built within their own borders if they can possibly do that.
Well, sure. The economics and science at some point catch up with a lot of that, though. And I mean, you look at at the push for a national renewable portfolio standard, which would be basically a wind standard. There just aren't the other renewables able to meet that. I mean, the southeast part of the country just doesn't receive hard, you wouldn't ever build a wind turbine there. And so, really the country is looking to the plains, and our responsibility is to make sure that whatever development does come here is done in the right way. But this process that we'll be going into with the five upper Midwest states, and each state has a regulatory commission appointee to it and a governor's office appointee, will be working on these issues of regional coordination, a lot of the things that Commissioner Weifold, you've been working on through MISO, but in a very focused effort specific to wind transmission and the upper Midwest.
When you mentioned the state's renewable targets, are these targets that the states have set themselves, or are they
up to this point, it's been state by state. There has been, in the most recent energy bill, there was a good deal of discussion about having a national portfolio standard. That was something that was very vigorously argued against by senators from a number of states, and frankly, I can't blame them. If I was a senator from a southeast state where there simply is not a wind resource at all, and knowing that, it would take massive upgrades and probably very large rate increases to try to import from thousands of miles away wind, I can see why they opposed it. Now, a state like North Dakota, we can probably meet it a lot easier. In fact, we probably can. But
the power, what I'm trying to get a handle on in terms of asking about the transmission line is that, okay, this is a very nice looking project, but is it going to be built any time in the next, frankly, in the next 10 years? Or
it just depends if they choose to build transmission right along with this project. They would have a chance of building this in the next 10 years. But the transmission has to be in place and a major part of this project in order for it to move forward.
There is not
transmission capacity for this project at the present time.
Do we have any idea what type of investment would be required to build the suitable transmission to allow
The company estimated in a press release they put out a few weeks ago a $1.4 billion investment in transmission.
Okay.
So what is the status of the 1,000 megawatt plant for Morton County, that area?
The commission has received no further information on that, and if you'll remember, at the time that was announced, around the time that the 345 kV line was proposed from center area to the Red River Valley, and then we later talked with Minn Kota, and they're considering also building wind in that area too, and there's, so again, one 345 kV line can't carry two 1,000 megawatt projects. It can probably only carry the electricity from one. All right?
So what is the state of the electric transmission network up in this part of the state that would allow for this project?
There in place right now, there is not a transmission infrastructure in place for that size project.
I don't know, Dale, that it would take some pretty intense research to find much capacity on the current North Dakota system for anything other than quite small wind projects or other types of projects, and which is why we've seen the type of development we've seen to this point.
150 here,
right.
200 there, whatever.
Which used to seem so large. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know how many more of those opportunities there are. There are probably a few of them out there. But
is there a possibility that that it would feed the grid north of the border? Is it?
Well, there really is no separate grid north of the border. It's all
interconnected.
I understand that. Yeah. I guess what I'm saying.
And this is not in the MISO footprint. This particular project is not in the MISO footprint.
Whose footprint is it in?
It would be in the MAP footprint.
Jerry's smiling over there.
Well, there's either, you have today either the MAP footprint or you have the MISO footprint. If you're in WAPA territory, you're still in the MAP footprint. You're in the...
You know, Dale, there. I remember when I first became a commissioner, you know, about 5 years ago, that there was more talk of wind-generated electricity going north of the border and going east from there and back down. And I don't know if that had to do with Manitoba Hydro backup or what it was, but that I have not heard that scenario talked about.
There has been some talk, but again, that would require. I had heard talk too about a line going from North Dakota over across Canada. Mm-hmm. However, that would again require a high voltage electricity line to be built.
Yep. Either way, you still have to get.
I was just wondering if that line. I guess what I was getting at is, I was wondering if that line could be built in Canada.
Perhaps, but it still requires an investment in transmission. Mm-hmm.
And the company has the company given you any indication that it intends to proceed itself with development of this transmission?
Well, the only information the commission has is by reading news clippings, which we know are... which we use as a source of information.
It's a stellar source of information.
It's not
the New York Times. We believe it.
Okay, yep, if it comes from the AP, then I believe it.
The 54 acres on Dakota Westmoreland permit, is this, I'm just a little bit unclear about, okay, the drag line is, I didn't understand the explanation of why it was necessary.
The drag line is currently mining coal east of Highway 49. Their intention is to mine coal west of Highway 49, so they have to build a walking path, basically. So that walking path being, you know, walking the drag line over the highway over to the other side. So that's the purpose of it.
Okay. So the walking path is to move the drag line.
Yes, to walk the drag line. And that's a good point. We should clarify that. It's not for exercise.
Well, that's when I was
among employees. That's not a bad idea either.
I was baffled by the term walking path because you said the walking path wasn't going to be reclaimed until 2016, and
they're done walking.
I didn't understand that at all.
When the baby boomers all graduate. It's a walking drag line.
Yeah,
it wears shoes, by the way. Actually,
a lot of them go on existing haul road, but this is a section that.
Actually, Ed and Shaquille O'Neal are the only two that use that particular size.
Can you tell me where the drag line is located, like as a reference to a city?
Highway, when you take the highway up to Beulah, it's on the east side of the highway now, and you can see it working in the large pit.
Excuse me?
No, it's south of Beulah.
Westmoreland.
So south of Beulah. So it's just going to walk across the highway and go over to the east side of their mining operations. Because remember, we went through this whole big deal of how they're closing that big pit over on the east side because they didn't get any further arrangements with easements or leases and such in that area. So they're and they had a lot of trouble with slide-ins. So they're closing that pit, and they're moving their whole operation over to the west side.
How far south of Beulah?
Well, I'd say, is that 5 miles?
About 3 miles. It's down by Coyote Station. Okay. There.
We should go by.
Yeah. And the reason that the walking path is staying until 2016 is, as Commissioner Weefall talked about, in case that there would be that opportunity to go back to the east side, which they hope for, of course, to mine more coal on the east side so as to not have to redo it again.
Does this affect the ability to drive on Highway 49?
For a couple of moments. I suppose while they're crossing, walking it across, it will. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that. Jim, how long does it take generally to walk a large drag line?
Building a bypass.
Oh, that's right. They are building, that's right.
So that the traffic will be, it's just a short bypass will be diverted for
Mm-hmm. Do you know when this bypass is being built?
I think a lot of this will get the construction done this fall yet. Mm-hmm. The drag line move is scheduled. I think it's sometime in.
It It's April of 2009 is the schedule of the moving the drag line. So they want to have construction done this fall.
Okay. So a bypass is being built to allow people to continue driving on the road or...
Well, the drag line will have to walk over that
yes.
bypass, then they'll shut down 49 and use the bypass and move the drag line across 49 and back. They've worked out those details with DOT.
But I just, there won't be a time when people will not be able to drive along the highway, whether it's on the bypass or the highway itself.
It's my understanding that they'll be able to still get around, the Highway 49 will not be closed, it's my understanding.
Okay. Yeah,
that's their intention.
Okay. And how long is it going to take to transport the drag line?
I'm not sure just what they're estimating, how many days to make the entire move. It's
always a big deal when drag lines cross important
highway,
highways. It's always fun, yeah.
Yep, by Falkirk a couple times now.
Gets a lot of attention.
It's a number of miles they have to move.
You know, the alternative is to disassemble the drag line. Move it in pieces and then reassemble it, and this is far more efficient.
Okay, and so
anything else?
And so the 54 acres is the ground that the drag line will be covering when it's moving from one point.
Basically, the ground that is needed to build the walk path.
Yeah, that's just for a short segment of it. It's just an area that currently is not permitted.
Yeah, there's other land that's permitted.
Okay.
This is only probably a half mile segment.
Half mile. Do you have any idea, like, a half mile and how wide? The length and width?
The actual...
The surface area.
Yeah, the actual width is probably not much more than 100 feet.
Okay.
Anything else?
I notice on your admin you have Tatanka Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do.
Are you coming to a conclusion on this case pretty much, or...?
I don't know. Stay for admin if you wish.
Could you talk about the net?
Staff just sent around a memo earlier today asking about the commission's temperature and giving them a little more time to have ongoing discussions with Tatanka.
Could you mention the Zappa Gap meeting? When was this requested, and could you just tell how this...
Oh, Hatton? Sure. There are two Zappa Gaps.
Yeah, I'm referring to the
Rame.
One in Ram.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to talk about the one in Hatton.
Sure. Actually, there are two Zappa Gap meetings that are coming up. One is in Ram. That was the result of a request from actually the mayor of Ram, who asked the commission to come down and hold one of our forums there. And whenever we're invited by a local community person, especially mayors and economic development groups, things like that, those seem to be the most successful meetings. And so we'll be heading down there. And then Hatton actually was the result of a meeting that the commission held with the Grand Forks Base Realignment Committee. There, Diane Blair is working with them. And coming out of that BRAC process, there was a survey of resources within the Grand Forks County area, things that... would be that they thought would be needed as far as infrastructure investments, things like that. And one of the things that the community, and when I say community, I mean the greater Grand Forks County community identified, was certain areas that they felt needed some cell phone upgrades. Hatton, which is, I think, technically in Trail County, is certainly within that marketing area, was one of the communities that they had identified. And so they've invited us to come up to Hatton, and we'll be scheduling that.
I think Hatton is actually in Trail County, instead of being technically in Trail County.
Thanks for that clarification.
Well, am I wrong?
Okay, we've got a long admin, so if you have
it's on the northern edge of Trail.
Do you have further questions, Dale?
Oh.
We have a long admin coming up
here. Pat's got an answer.
Pat.
In the 10-year plan, they said that they were planning in 2008 to increase injection at Stanley to 80,000 barrels per day.
Okay.
So 65 was the
current capacity, injection capacity.
So we subtract 15,000 from 80,000 and we come up with our number?
That's my impression.
Okay. Then the commission is going to now take a 10-minute break. and sign our paperwork, and then we'll be back for the commission meeting at 11:10. Thank you.